Welcome to episode 13 of the Ikivi podcast. In this episode, we have with us Kestrel Jenkins, host and producer of Conscious Chatter, a leading podcast that reimagines the narrative around sustainability, questions conscious consumerism, and works to deconstruct how oppressive systems impact the sustainable fashion space. We talk about her podcast, the impact she has made with it, and the power of the audio format of storytelling. We also talk about the progress we have made in sustainable fashion and the larger, more long-term impact we can generate in the system by participating in making policy changes. She is a leader and change maker who is leading the conscious fashion industry by educating and having important conversations with people in the space. I'm excited for you to listen to this episode. Do check out her podcast, Conscious Chatter, if you haven't already. Thank you so much, Kestrel, for joining us. We've been following your journey for quite a while now, I think probably ever since you started. And I'm so excited to have you on our podcast. My first question to you is about the Conscious Chatter podcast. You started it about 5 years ago. Can you tell us a little bit about the podcast itself and what inspired you to start it?
Sure. First of all, thanks so much for having me. It's always fun to be on a podcast because it's kind of like a little bit uncomfortable being in the other position. Like I have to answer the questions. I can't just ask them. But I'm really happy to be here. And I've been following your journey. I'm so grateful that Dominique Drakeford connected us in the past. But as far as my journey with the podcast goes, I guess since I kind of dipped my toes into the sustainability and fashion space, I became really kind of like obsessed with wanting to bring this conversation to more of like an everyday person and have it be really accessible and a conversation that anyone could join in, because I think the industry historically has had this tendency to be a bit exclusive and kind of frame it as, oh, well, sustainability is something you have to buy into, which is totally absurd, because like those who have been the most sustainable historically have not been buying things, have been being resourceful and using what they have and that kind of thing. So with that approach, I had a couple of different blogs. I was writing stories about different people who would send pictures to me, and I would share photos of their outfits and the stories behind what they were wearing. And a friend of mine who has a hemp and organic cotton t-shirt company was looking for podcasts, and he couldn't find any that were about sustainability and fashion. And so he was like, so Kes, I have this idea. I think you should just start a podcast and talk about what you're already talking about. And at the time, I thought that it was something like so far out of my reach and was like, okay, cool idea. I don't know if I can actually pull that off. And then it, for some reason, it kind of stuck with me. And I started, you know, Googling what does it look like to build a podcast or to start a podcast. And about 5 years ago at that time, it seemed like there was like pretty basic steps, like buy a microphone and you could get one for like $100. And then you could use the software that you could download for free from the internet and then start doing Skype calls with people and, you know, record interviews. So I don't know what really pushed me over the edge, because I tend to be a perfectionist, but I was like, all right, well, I'm going to just try it. And the first episode, my mom interviewed me and the audio is horrific. So like, if you listen to episode one, know that the audio is really bad because I didn't know what I was doing yet. Mm-hmm. But it ended up like just kind of taking on a journey of its own and becoming like really powerful for myself and my own learnings. And also it's become like a meeting space now. I think a lot of people mm-hmm. go to the show to see who else is out there, who's doing work. Like I have a lot of entrepreneurs like yourself who listen to the show because they learn from others in the industry that way. And And it's I'm really grateful that it's become what it is and that it connects me with people around the world like you.
Yeah, that's so amazing. Was it as popular when you started 5 years ago? Because over the last 3 years, I would say it's kind of just like booming right now, podcasts in general as a format of storytelling. But was it as popular then when you started?
Definitely it was not as popular. I was apparently, according to others around me, the first podcast to cover sustainability and fashion.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there were several podcasts, and because of the way that kind of like radio was kind of shifting into the podcast space as well, mm-hmm. they were out there, but it wasn't like it is now. I mean, now it's, I feel like another layer of marketing tools often, you know, where it's like, you have a podcast and your Instagram and like all these ways to learn about what you're doing. So it's definitely transformed. I remember when I started, the key was kind of like, get on the new and noteworthy page on iTunes. Mm-hmm. That was like the goal. And if you did that, then you could like help kind of get some early growth. Yeah. And I did that and I was like, whoa, this is so amazing. But also I think there were a lot less, you know, mm-hmm. podcasts in the whole pool then. But yeah, it's definitely transformed. But I think it's pretty incredible as a way to share stories and to connect with people. And I think it's a medium that's really unique. I find that audio is a way that we can get really intimate in mm-hmm. a sense, really yeah. quickly, versus other mediums. Because like when you just are hearing audio, it's like you're just hearing a voice and you have to pay attention. And I find that sometimes I learn so much about the guests I'm talking to that maybe we never would have learned if we were just yeah. like met up somewhere, but because of this medium, it allows you to just kind of like get into depth really quickly.
Yeah. I think I personally am also relying on audio nowadays more so than videos as well. I think it's such an amazing format to just learn. Your focus is purely on it. It's really fun.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you think that as well, that yeah. it has that power.
Yeah. I know that you're up to a lot of other things as well, in addition to Conscious Chatter. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you dedicate your time to all of this as well as your little baby?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have this thing where I'm an Aries, so I tend to not have patience is one of like my issues that I have to always, you know, acknowledge, be aware of and work on. And I think part of that is like, I like to try many different things and many different projects. So besides the podcast, I also have a small brand called Left Edit with a co-founder. And we manufacture locally in Los Angeles. We focus on one garment at a time. So I think because of our approach, that allows me to distribute time because we're not like making a full collection on a regular basis. We make one garment at a time and kind of focus on that in different colors gradually. And then I also co-founded a platform called Group Chat with Brittany Sierra, who is the founder of Sustainable Fashion Forum. And Group Chat is in its young stages. We just started it last year. And it's basically a space to kind of get deeper into the nuances around sustainability and fashion in a sort of social media sort of approach as a platform, but where you can share more context and information, because we're kind of frustrated with how if you're on Instagram and you're in a conversation, there's all these comments suddenly come, which is really amazing, but then you can't share links. Like it's hard to follow the conversation often and things get lost. And so this platform provides a space where we can kind of go back to those different aspects. And we're really focused on our members and having them lead conversations versus ourselves to have more perspectives at the table. And then I do consulting. Mm-hmm. For brands. That's one of the different aspects that I sometimes do. And then I also do a wardrobe styling for larger shoots on and off. So that's kind of like a snapshot. I feel like in the past I've been like, I'm doing way too many things. But then as time goes on, it's like things tend to kind of overlap and feed into each other. And so it's kind of like this little ecosystem around myself that seems to currently work, balancing it with being a parent and all of that is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
And I don't have it all figured out, but my partner is an entrepreneur as well, and is a photographer and videographer. So we are often just, it's a daily kind of balance. So it's like, okay, I have this meeting here, so you need to take Wilder now. And then, okay, then I take her back now. And so a lot of people probably think we're pretty chaotic, but we make it work. And I'm grateful to be able to live a lifestyle like this where we can be more present in her life as she grows up too.
Do you, is it safe to say that you spend a majority of your time podcasting, or is it kind of evenly split through all your other responsibilities?
I would say in general, majority of time on the podcast, but and offshoots of it. So I didn't mention, like, I'm working on another project with Dominique now as well that I didn't really touch on. That's a kind of like a continuation of the Root Project podcast collaboration that we did.
Yeah. Amazing.
Amazing. So yeah, we're working on an offshoot of that. That's not necessarily a podcast. And more will be revealed soon on that. But again, like, the podcast, I would say I predominantly am focused on, and like the little kind of surrounding projects that connect to that.
Yeah. The reason I'm asking is because we also do have a lot of young businesses and brands listening into this podcast, and a lot of people do want to start podcasts. Do you think, from your experience, it can be a business in itself?
I think it can be, but it is very tricky to be a business. I think so. I was just having this conversation earlier with Dominique about just who gives you your money and who you take money from, especially when you're in this sort of like sustainability conscious space. It can become quite complex.
Yeah.
So I think depending on what works for you and what feels comfortable for you, as to like how you're going to align with brands or not align with brands, I think the financial element of building a podcast is really specific to an individual. And so I've grappled with it quite a bit along the road and not knowing what I felt most comfortable with. And I'm in a new direction now where I'm shifting towards a focus on partnering with education institutions, but I've worked with brands often in the past and it gets really tricky. So I think if you're just creating a podcast and you don't care who the sponsors are, it's probably, once you have a listenership, it's fairly easy to build that as a business. But if you care, then there's just extra layers of questions to ask.
I feel like this is such a trend in the space that we're in. Like, you care so much that it's so difficult to make those financial decisions. I just find myself dealing with this so frequently. It's just something you keep coming at, right?
Yeah, it's so true. But it's like, you can't allow it to prevent you from moving forward, because you need, we live in a capitalist global economy. Like, we have to have funding in order to continue to, you know, move forward with the projects we're working on. So I think it's a tricky balance, and it has to be like what feels good to you. But also, like, we need to give ourselves some grace, because it's a lot. And as long as I go back and forth on a pendulum with this, but as long as the funder, they don't have any say in my content and they aren't able to change what I'm saying and what I'm doing, I'm starting to feel more comfortable with taking their funds if it's going towards the work that I'm doing.
Right. That makes sense. So you've been in the conscious industry for a while now. And you've spoken to and interviewed so many people. I think it's what, like 300 episodes that you've done with the podcast?
257, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you tell us from your perspective where we're headed as an industry?
That's a huge question. I think obviously it depends on who you ask and what layer of supply chain you ask. I think we're at a stage where, from a marketing standpoint, there's so much more understanding of the language that's mm-hmm. important to shift toward a better fashion system globally. Yet, I think that there's a lot of issues when it comes to backing up that language and understanding what it actually means in practice. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we're at this stage right now where everything is being driven by marketing. And while companies want to, I'm talking about larger companies specifically in this framework, like, you know, larger companies want to become part of this sustainability movement, quote unquote. They want to be, you know, asking more questions. They want to be sharing what they're doing. They want to be more, quote unquote, transparent. Yet, I think that they're not able to back up that language enough with what's mm-hmm. happening behind the scenes. And I think financially, they're not putting their money where the money needs to go to help make those changes. I think too often we're still seeing companies entirely driven by profit. And, you know, there's no other stakeholders at the table. It's like profit is the bottom line. And yes, we want to do these things so it looks better so we can gain more profit from shoppers who are interested in more sustainable options. But we're in a place where we're not seeing enough action personally.
Mm-hmm. And do you also do interviews with these big organizations on your podcast?
I do sometimes. I've always been interested in hearing multiple sides because I think that that's really important. And I've not been someone who's like really interested in like using shame as like mm-hmm. a tactic for, you know, getting people into this conversation, because I think it often tends not to help anyone. But yeah, I mean, I have had some of these conversations, but I guess I haven't had a conversation with H&M or Zara or, you know, Shein or any of those. I would potentially be open to it, but I also don't know if it would be beneficial because mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it would be yet again, like a marketing facade. So I think it gets tricky. I was just reading Remake's transparency report earlier today. I'm not sure if you saw that they released that, but they scored several brands mm-hmm. based on their specific kind of value system. And it's really interesting breaking down who gets those points and who doesn't. And like several brands are like in the negative, they didn't even get a point. So I guess just seeing that, I respect what they're doing and understand that, you know, some brands are like so far off of this path that we're in a rough spot. And at that point, I feel like it's more beneficial to advocate for more governmental regulation and things like that that could potentially place regulation on those brands so they have to change versus like continuing to ask them.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like we're in such a niche, and especially, you know, we're in the industry and we're constantly in it day in and day out. But there are a lot of people that just are not aware. But from a bird's eye view, do you feel, say, over the years, what kind of progress have we had? Because we see progress, like we see that there are a lot more people in it talking about it because we're in it. But do you see from like a bird's eye view that we've had progress, and what kind of progress at a macro level?
Yeah, I think at a macro level, definitely from the media perspective, we are in a totally different place now than even 5 years ago. I remember like searching for any sort of articles that connected to sustainability or fashion. And it was like impossible to find, like no one was writing about it. It wasn't quote unquote newsworthy. Mm-hmm. And now you have, you know, very large publications ensuring that they have people specifically covering sustainability and fashion, like Vogue Business and Marie Claire. And, you know, like, I guess publications that have very high circulation numbers are talking about it consistently. And so I think from a media perspective, we're in a very different place. And we have a lot of journalists that are really focusing in on this and trying to understand the nuances of it, not just read a press release and regurgitate the information, which I think is key to telling this story and also like challenging what brands are doing from mm-hmm. a media perspective. I think also just brands understanding that they need to change in certain ways because their shoppers are asking for it is a big change as well. I mean, like 10 years ago when I first kind of stepped into this industry, I guess it was like 12 years ago now. I interned for PeopleTree in London and I came back to the US and people asked what I was doing. And I was like, oh, I was working for PeopleTree. They're a fair trade fashion company. And like the glazed over looks that I would get, like nobody knew what the heck I was talking about. They were like, what does that even mean? It didn't connect. And I think, So I think from just like a general knowledge for our everyday person, like there's so much more information. And so we're at a place where now we have basic education out there. And now from a brand perspective down to, you know, a shopper perspective, now is the time where we need to get into more of the nuance. And I think with any sort of like transformation or revolution, like when you're shifting from the basic understanding to getting into the depth and the nuance, it gets really tricky mm-hmm. because then there is a lot of misinformation. Information gets kind of co-opted or utilized in a way that could be performative because people don't really understand what everything means from all sides of it. So I think we're in an interesting time right now where, we have to be patient and we have to like continue to ensure that we're asking enough questions, or if we don't know what questions to ask, like find someone who maybe does, because I think with this sort of a period, there's a lot of misinformation.
Yeah. Do you know what educational institutions are doing from their side as well? Because I know that when I went to FIT, we were not really exposed to sustainability at all. However, I mean, I did merchandising, but there wasn't a separate section. There weren't separate classes, because I feel like another important aspect of it is designers, budding designers, or designers that are just starting out should also have the education, but also the resources so that they can actually be more conscious in their production processes and things like that.
Absolutely. 100%. I agree. I just had a conversation on the show, the episode that released this week with Farai Samoy, and she's a designer, entrepreneur, and a professor. And she's the head of the department at Thomas Jefferson University. And she was telling me that like many people in the department listen to my podcast and they're utilizing it in their classrooms. And she was, you know, talking about the different layers of sustainability that they're getting into in the classroom. And I was like, this is so incredible to hear, because I feel like so often throughout the last 5 years of the show, my conversations, including, I think you mentioned that on the show I did with you, is, you know, designers or people in the space being really frustrated that they weren't getting any of this information while they were in university. And so I was really motivated by that. I feel like it's definitely shifting. I think obviously it's not every university, but I have a handful of universities that have reached out to me that said they use conscious chatter in the classroom. So I think that that's an indicator right there that a lot of universities are thinking about sustainability and just know that it has to be part of the conversation at least.
Yeah. Apart from you making an impact on the industry and you having a positive impact on the industry, what kind of impact has the podcast had on you? Has there been something unique that you've learned over the years, over doing these podcasts that you had probably little or no awareness of before?
Absolutely. I think probably more than what I've contributed to the industry, I have learned from the show. I think from different guests that I've spoken with and from just like all of these conversations, my framework of how I understand sustainability has shifted immensely. You know, I think I went into it with like a very naive approach as a white woman, not really knowing anything except sustainability is a better option. This makes sense to me. I care about the environment. I care about people, like a very basic sort of approach. And through my conversations and like, I have so much gratitude to all of the guests that I've had on the show. I really have transformed the way that I look at sustainability, the layers of it, the ways that it is about being resourceful, like I mentioned earlier, and the ways that it is about like listening to Black and Brown and Indigenous communities who have been practicing sustainability forever, and how, you know, the narrative needs to shift away from buy this, not that, and toward, okay, like how do we use what we have to the best of our ability and take care of things? And, you know, I think it's largely taught me to be more aware of capitalism and colonization and how they have impacted the fashion system and how it continues to impact the fashion system today and how I need to constantly be aware of that and check myself to further, I guess, understand the way that these systems are interacting with it and impacting it.
Mm-hmm. We were a little earlier talking about misinformation and the amount of content that's out there nowadays. How much information, we kind of feel overwhelmed with the amount of information we can actually get access to. How do we take care to kind of evaluate what we consume as consumers? And how do we try to balance that?
Are you thinking of like from a media standpoint or from a product standpoint, like in what sense of consuming?
I think in terms of learning and understanding the industry.
Mm-hmm. I think it is very tricky and it's impossible for any of us to be like an expert on all of the details. And so I don't want people to feel like so overwhelmed that they want to check out from even, you know, kind of dipping their toes into this conversation and this movement. But I think it's a matter of just paying attention to like where the information is coming from, allowing yourself to slow down. Because I think we're in this mindset now, like when you look at the way social media operates, and I am a part of this, like, it's like, here's a roundup with 5 slides to tell you all about this massive topic. And here's, you know, here's one post to give you one quote that tells you something, but it's not giving you like all the context. And I think I am someone who's obsessed with context. And like, I think a lot of people are not so into that because it's nice to just read a headline and get the basic information. And I am guilty of also doing that at times, but I do love to learn the backstory and understand like what is coming around this topic. And I think if we can slow down a little bit and like look beyond that one post and read the full article or see who is writing the article and look them up or, you know, follow people that we respect and like develop relationships in a sense with those people, because, you know, it's really tricky and none of us have all the answers, but I think the more honest and open people are with us about sharing answers when we ask questions as well, the more mm-hmm. I trust them. It's like, if you think of it from a standpoint of if you're curious about a product and you ask a company a question, like if they get back to me and they tell me like, this is what we're doing, but we're not doing this yet, I'm like, okay, I respect that, because mm-hmm. you understand what's going on and you understand where you want to be. And we can't be perfect. Like, creating products is going to have an impact. So I think it really is about honesty and building trust and slowing ourselves down, like, as tricky as it is.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, it kind of boils down to investing time in things, even if it is consuming content. We just want like bite-sized information so that we know it. But I mm-hmm. think just in taking that ownership to invest your time into learning something, I think is something that we're definitely missing.
Yeah. And there's so many things to learn, and sometimes that can get super overwhelming. So I think that's why it also can be beneficial to like find people you respect. Like, I respect you and the work you're doing, so I follow you in your work so I can learn things from you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think having people like that in your bubble can help alleviate some of that, because then it's like you don't have to do all the research. You have some people you respect and admire that can help, you know, do some of that for you, so it doesn't always go back to you having to deep dive into every detail.
Yeah. Talking about perfectionism, something that you mentioned much earlier in our conversation, but also just now in this form of, you know, consuming content. I remember a little while ago that you posted something on Instagram where you were talking about how you were at a restaurant, and sometimes you're in situations where you have no control over. And you were at a restaurant, and I think you were with your baby, and I think you had to use a straw. And that really, I hope that I'm correct with what I just said.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we are getting takeout from our favorite pizza place.
Yeah. And I feel like we all encounter these situations where we're not perfect. There are some situations that, you know, you don't probably necessarily think of prior to leaving the house, for example, so that you're prepared all the time. Mm-hmm. How do you feel we can keep learning, growing, and adapting ourselves to these exceptions we may need to make? We can't always be hard on ourselves and these things in order for us to actually make progress or be judgmental towards others, because I feel like that there is that toxic space as well online where we're judgmental about other people and the things that they're doing and that they're not perfect, because these are day-to-day things and these are real-world instances. How do we kind of be gentle with ourselves and focus on the idea of progress over perfection?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it makes me think of that conversation of like individual actions versus collective actions. And I remember listening to a podcast that Dr. Ayana Elizabeth did. And it was like really breaking down these two approaches. Like, how do we like address the climate crisis? Is it through collective action or individual action? Is like the X versus Y. And in the end, it came down to like both are important, pretty much. Through like lots of data and research, it was like both are important in different ways. Like, the individual actions make us feel better. Like, mm-hmm. they make us feel motivated and like we're part of something and that we're doing our part, which is important to feel like we're getting somewhere and addressing something on our own. And then the collective action, you know, like thinking about government regulation and larger scale sorts of systems change, like that is going to have a larger impact faster. Mm-hmm. But it obviously takes time. And so I feel like listening to that episode was really powerful to me to just kind of remember and understand that if I make a little mistake, like, it's okay. It's not like my one choice was going to change the world. You know, I think that there's so much marketing that tells us that it's like, yeah, buy this dress and you'll change the world. It's like, okay, I don't really think that that's logical.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little over the top. And while, like, I am a huge proponent of, you know, supporting like small brands and companies that are trying to do, you know, powerful work, I don't think that we should be aligning like purchases with these huge changes. And so I think, you know, like little things that happen, they're going to happen. And I almost feel like if we're aware of them, that's the positive thing, mm-hmm, because then we're going to be mindful of it in the future and we're going to try to adjust when we can. But like, you can't control it always. And that was, I ordered like a juice for my daughter and it came in a cup with a straw and I didn't ask for that. And I was like, okay, they were being nice. They wanted her to have a, yeah, straw and it's already in the cup. So what can I do? And I feel like Aja Barber does a really great job articulating this beautifully as well. You know, just reminding us that like little things happen, like, but like, don't let it slow you down. Think of the big picture and, you know, remind yourself of like the larger things that need to shift. And I think that there's also a power in acknowledging when we have those slip ups, mm-hmm, because I feel like it welcomes more people in. Because like we talked about earlier, like there's been this tendency for the sustainability movement to be very like perfectionist driven and to be very like, oh, you did that. Oh, I can't believe you did that. Like, how is that helping anyone? It's literally, yeah, helping no one, including yourself. And so I think the more that we're honest about these like little things that happen on a day-to-day basis, the more we humanize like the reality of living in a capitalistic, super wasteful world that we,
yeah,
that have been built around us. And so, yeah, I think if we just acknowledge it and share it, it welcomes more people in, so more people can join the conversation.
I think that's so powerful, welcoming people in, because I do feel that. I feel like there is so much pressure for you to even talk about being conscious or sustainable in the way you live your life. Because if you do, and if they see you with like, I don't know, something that is not sustainable, they're like, oh my God, but you're not, you know,
a like Starbucks cup, for example. Yeah, I feel like lately, if I run and I get a coffee and sometimes they don't want to take your mug and I get a Starbucks cup and I'm like, if somebody sees me, what are they going to say? Like, are, yeah, they going to call me out? Like, are they going to take my picture and tell people that I actually have a throwaway Starbucks cup in my hand right now?
So stressful. Yeah. But I feel like there is that one level of everybody who's in it and aware of it. Like, there is that one level. But you're really not letting people in to want to be sustainable because you're like, okay, so you're vegan, but you're buying plastic bags. Or mm-hmm, something like that. You know, there's always a give and take.
But it's also like so values oriented. So it's, yeah, like, it's tricky because there's no one's going to be perfect. But then also there's not one way to be sustainable. You know, mm-hmm, there's so many approaches and we can't individually tackle every single thing. So
yeah,
you have to do what works for you and your lifestyle and your family and then I think the most important thing is like to show up to advocate for, you know, political change, legislation change, like these sorts of things, like make a huge difference. Like I'm based in California and the Garment Worker Protection Act passed recently, which is a massive milestone and a huge win for garment workers. And just it shows that like advocacy work can make an impact. And mm-hmm, so I think the more that we embrace and like and own the fact that our voice has power from that perspective, the more that we can see things shift like from more of a larger macro perspective.
Mm-hmm. So my last question to you is about the resources that you refer to or rely on or enjoy kind of reading. Could you share with us some from the industry that we selfishly want to know, but also our listeners are most definitely interested in what you rely on?
Well, I mentioned Aja Barber. I am one of her patrons, and so I love just seeing what she has to say about the industry. She always like emails out her hot takes on whatever is happening, mm-hmm. and she's so blunt and to the point, and it's really refreshing. I love following intersectional environmentalists and the way that they've grown so quickly. Leah Thomas and Deandra Marset and their work. I think that the way that they're building a nonprofit is very unique and very different than we have seen in this space. I follow lots of people on social media. I'm trying to think of some of these bigger spaces. I love reading Whitney Bach's writing. Mm-hmm. She's written for like Fashionista in the past, and now she has a lot of other bylines. Atmos is really mm-hmm. incredible. I love reading their work. I had their climate editor on the show in the past, and I really love how they like welcome many layers to conversations and many voices. I guess for me, like, I really like to read many different perspectives. So as I learn more, it's like, how does it intersect with fashion? So mm-hmm. like, I was looking, I'm like sitting at my desk and here's my book stack. And so it's like, Unraveled by Maxine, Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Kimmerer, Dressed in Dreams by Tanisha Ford, who I discovered from Whitney McGuire. I have Beyond the Gender Binary by Alec Vaidmanen, like Consumed by Aja, like that's my stack. And so I think that for me, it's really about following many different perspectives and learning about the world and all mm-hmm. of the like ridiculous, inequitable ways that we have, I guess the ridiculous ways that systems have oppressed people mm-hmm. and understanding these systems and how they influence fashion, because it's all connected.
It is. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you so much. I think we got a great book recommendation list as well. I'm sure our listeners are going to kind of dig in a little bit more into these resources, but also we'll also link to your podcast and all of these resources mentioned. So if anybody's interested, y'all can, you know, kind of listen in. But thank you so much, Kestrel, for joining us. It was lovely to have you. I've always been curious about you and your life and what you do behind the scenes. So this is such an exciting way to get to know you better.
Thank you so much for having me. I massively admire the work you're doing. So it's an honor.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the Ikivi podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The Ikivi podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at Ikivi.